I'm going to cut a bit off the oak tree. Cut it off here. Okay, so I've cut like, what is it, off the V. It's like a V. And it's to tighten up the string. So I'll just have to get a knife and just take the edges off it.
That's the voice of a reed sculptor. Her name is Geraldine Wisdom. And she, as you could hear, was hard at work at her lakeside home on Loch Derg. Now, she's been working on an unusual boat project that, once it's fully made and has been launched into the water, will quickly begin to rot and eventually return to nature and be no more. I'm Caroline Brennan, and this is a programme about a traditional Irish boat that was both made and used by those living and working in and around the River Suck in County Roscommon. It was called the Bundle Raft.
It's one of four fundamental boat types. You know, you have a skin boat, you have a dugout canoe or a log boat, you have a wooden boat, and then you have the bundle raft. Effectively, you know, it's one of the four basic types.
That was Christore McCarthig, who is the archivist at the Irish Folklore Commission in UCD. Now, the Folklore Commission was to play a hugely important role in archiving the oral history of the bundle raft, and we will look at that shortly. But many miles from the urban busyness of Dublin 4 lies the slow-moving Suck River, as Dysart man Eamon Clougher first pointed out to us.
But you can see the Suck from up here if you want to help.
All right.
We're all closed in, look.
All right, you can't see it from there.
No. Go down to the corner there and shoot to the bed down there.
Sure, do you know what we could do is we could go down in the car if you wanted to later on. What would that be? Would that be all right?
It would be all right.
Yeah, I could give you
a half a mile. It's only half a mile across the...
Yeah. So would you mind sitting into the car with me later on?
Oh, geez, I'd love it.
Parts of the River Suck are very slow moving and as a result have acres and acres of reeds growing along its bank. Reeds are highly buoyant and it is their buoyancy that makes them absolutely ideal for the local farmers in the past to tie together a bundle of them and make, yeah, you have it, a bundle raft. In researching this documentary, I realised that people intersperse the term reed with rush and rush with reed all the time. And listening to Matthew Jebb, who is the director of the National Botanic Gardens in Dublin, the confusion is understandable.
The difference between a reed and a rush. A reed is a big tall grass, and you'll see them in low-lying lakes right across the country, looking a bit like sort of pampas grass, this big swinging bed of tall reeds is plants that were often used for thatching buildings, whereas a rush is very familiar to people passing a boggy field. You'll see the little green spiky leaves of rush. They're perfectly round and glossy and a very sharp point to them, but they've got a very light air-filled core to these plants, so all have an amazing waterproof coat and inside that a soft air-filled pith, and that is what makes for their tremendous buoyancy. So if we take the little rushes, for example, they're very narrow. They're only a few millimetres in diameter, and there's a lot of heavy surface to them and a small pith. The reed, it's a bit bigger in diameter, and it has got a much bigger area of pith, which makes for extra buoyancy.
So explain to people how you go about and harvest those reeds.
Well, I got up this morning at 6:30 and I put on a wetsuit, zipped it up and went out 7:15 and I picked rushes until 10 o'clock this morning. And you can see them all. I've pulled them onto the shore. They're all in like sheaves, but they're spread out to dry a bit before I tie them up into bundles and put them up against the hedge for a few days before I take them in a trailer to a dry shed. It takes about 6 weeks to dry them.
And when you go into the water around here, I mean, how deep are we talking about for you to wade in and get over? Because the reeds are a bit further over than just where we are standing at the moment.
I would be about chest deep in water, and sometimes you hit a rock and fall over and it's not very comfortable, or stub your toe.
So I'm looking at the reeds on the water. Now, how, on just on average, how high are the reeds at this time of the year above the waterline?
It depends. Some of them are only, 4 or 5 feet, but some of them are up to 8 feet above the water. Usually when you go out, the deeper you go, the longer the rushes.
And how far underground do you actually go in order to do the cutting?
Well, I have a long, like I say, it's like what the Grim Reaper uses. It's like a short side. I'm standing chest deep in water, and I've got the scythe in one hand, and I'm holding the rushes. So you cut them right off the bed of the lake, should I say.
There's only so much of reeds that you can hold in your hand. So are you wading back and forth? Because there's quite a distance between where we're standing now and where the reeds are. So you're obviously over and back all the time.
No, I go out and I'll pick an area where I cut. So I'm cutting them in a handful at a time. And they float. They float beautifully. So they float up into a big pile, and I put them up on top of each other. And then after, I usually stay out for about 2 hours. I start to get cold. So I pile them all up and make like an island, and I push the whole lot into the shore, and then I pull them up and spread them out.
Traditionally, there were three main types of bundle raft. There was a type that had a basket-like frame into which the sheaves were compressed. There was a type that had sides made out of boards, presumably made like a floorboard, which would probably keep the boatsman from getting wet. And there was a circular type, which was made from an inner frame of in the shape of a cross, like two pieces of, say, hazel wood in the form of a cross, and then out from this, a circular shape was woven. A circular raft was woven using coils of these sheaves of rushes.
That's Seamus Mock-Phillip, who is the curator of the National Museum of Ireland Country Life. The museum is in Ballina, County Mayo, and currently houses a bundle raft. It's not in its pure form, but in actual fact is a composite of all three types of bundle rafts just described there. But before we get to its story, it's worth mentioning that other countries around the world used and still use boats made out of bundles of reed.
There aren't many places in Europe where there's any record of such craft. The only places are Hungary and Sweden, most strongly of all in Sardinia. There were boats of reed there, very similar kind of boats of reed. They've only gone out of use, say, in the last 20 years, in a place called Cabras on the west side of Sardinia. And they were used on the sea, in fact, there. You know, further afield, there were reed boats on the Nile and in North Africa. And the most famous place of all would be Lake Titicaca, and the lake straddling Bolivia, Peru, there in the Andes.
Lake Titicaca in South America has papyrus beds, and they build reed boats identical to reed boats drawn in the tombs and pyramids of Egypt. Thor Heyerdahl was a remarkable Norwegian archaeologist who was fascinated about putting archaeological discoveries into practice. So his idea was, did the ancient Egyptians sail across the Atlantic? So he simply set about building huge reed boats, and strangely, he couldn't find people in Egypt to do it anymore. He had to go to the Marsh Arabs between Iran and Iraq, where they had the know-how how to build a big reed boat. The first one sunk halfway across the Atlantic, and the second boat made it.
Now, back closer to home, it's worth asking what the locals around the River Suck were using the bundle rafts for. Here's Seamus Mock-Phillip again.
They were used for fowling and fishing and just negotiating the callows or floodlands of the River Suck. The Suck still is, and especially then was very prone to flooding in the wintertime. The land is known callow land, which comes from the Irish callow, which can mean floodland. In fact, and also the Irish name for the boat, in fact, is related to the word flood also, because the boat is known in the area as a Clí Hollaga, and that was a kind of a corruption of the Irish Clia Holca. Clia, as we would know from Balia or Clia, would mean a kind of a hurdle structure, And tolka means flood. So it would mean something like a flood raft. So it was very much used for hopping from island to island, fowling and fishing on the River Suck.
Now, there are records of a similar type of craft being used on Loch Earn and also in the Oolar Lakes of East Mayo. And also, and very much by chance, I met with a man called Richie McCabe, who recalls seeing a similar type of craft being put to some very good use.
Now, as I mentioned earlier there about Loch Ree and the islands being used for people to live on down the years, and in recent times, cattle are grazed on them. Now, as near as 2 years ago, actually last year, I happened to be fishing on Loch Ree, and a boat, standard lake boat with a heavy duty engine, passed close to us, towing a raft, and on the raft were two or three cows and their calves. The most unusual sight. And that was heading from the mainland out to the island, and when the raft pulled in at the island, the cattle just got off it and casually walked out onto the island. They were almost as if they were trained, and there was no problem, there was no dogs need, there was no shouting, nothing like that. They were well used to it, and a most unusual sight. And it just goes to show you that modern trucks had no place out there, but certainly the raft had.
Yes, no doubt this was a type of raft, but I am definitely not convinced that this was a bundle raft in its original form made of organic material. It's a great image of Irish country life though, isn't it? Now, the sad fact remains that the use of the bundle raft is no more and probably would have been completely forgotten in our history books only for two things. First of all, back in the 1930s, Irish language scholars here and abroad were pushing the Irish Free State, the new Irish Free State indeed, to begin to gather and preserve our Irish heritage.
The Irish Folklore Commission was established formally in 1935. Eamon de Valera was a Taoiseach, and the sum of £100 for every county in Ireland was voted by the Dáil for the purposes of collecting, recording folklore and preserving it. The main thrust and the source of inspiration came from Scandinavia, because the Scandinavians had been collecting folklore in a fairly systematic manner from the 19th century, from the later 19th century. When the commission was set up in 1935, we adopted the Swedish model of collecting and archiving folklore.
The second thing that helped preserve the memory of the bundle raft was down to one man who was hired to gather the traditional customs, the practices and the traditions by the commission. It was he who brought to light the history and the usage of the bundle rafts on the River Suck. His name was James Delaney, and here is his friend and colleague, Barbara Neelin.
Jim Delaney was one of the relatively small number of people who was employed as a full-time collector with the Irish Folklore Commission. And Jim worked in the period from the 1950s right into the 1980s. Jim Delaney, although he spent most of his adult life, I suppose you could say, in the Midlands of Ireland, but he was actually a Wexford man himself originally. I did get to know Jim in later years, and I went on many collecting expeditions with him, and we developed quite a close personal relationship. He was somebody I was enormously fond of. He was absolutely terrific company. He was a tremendously disciplined and organised and dedicated and conscientious collector as well. And I think we have to remember here that with Jim Delaney, as with all of the full-time collectors who worked for the Irish Folklore Commission for the most part, it's a very difficult job. You know, it's a terribly lonely and a very solitary occupation in many ways, in that you're working by yourself, physically most of the time, and you go off and you make your recordings with people, which obviously represents the social aspect of the work. But then after that, the real work starts. I mean, the easy bit, in a sense, is making recordings and doing interviews with people. Most of the time, that's, you know, enjoyable and very pleasurable and so on. But the hard bit is when you have to go home and then start transcribing and processing that material. And it's difficult enough to do that entirely on your own. And yet Jim, as I say, was a hugely productive worker, and the sheer volumes of material that he recorded all over the Midlands speaks for itself in terms of the amount of work he did.
Gathering oral history ensures that the important features of our culture are not forgotten. Here's Beatrice Kelly, who is the head of policy and research with the Heritage Council.
Lots of parts of our heritage are very tangible. You know, we have the castles, we have the islands, we have the beaches, we have the rivers. And then a lot of our heritage is also what we remember or what had been made, or the way people used to live. And very often the only remnants of that are people's memories or people's accounts, possibly recounting things that were told to them by maybe their grandparents or elderly neighbours or even new neighbours who'd moved into the area. So the importance of recording people's memories and perceptions and knowledge of their own particular area is extremely important in giving us perhaps a whole chain of values that perhaps we're totally unaware of. So take, for example, the bundle rafts of the River Suck. There is an object, a boat, a very functional object, and that now no longer exists. They're made out of something incredibly organic and that would have been, I imagine, made from almost from season to season, that now are part of a way of life that has completely disappeared. So people's memories of that are the most powerful thing we have left to remind us that they exist and that they were used. I mean, one of the sadnesses now is that, for example, with the reed that was used for thatching, now a lot of the reed from the River Shannon is not of good enough quality or good enough length to use. So likewise with the reed rafts of the bundle rafts of the River Suck, they probably cannot be made in the same way that they were due to the quality of the reed. But still, you know, the only way to explore these aspects of our heritage are by talking to people. The local knowledge is really the only place that this aspect of our heritage still lives on.
It was through such local knowledge and the sharing of that knowledge through conversations that led to a composite bundle raft being built and ending up in the National Museum today.
The maker of the raft here, which was acquired by the National Museum in 1962, his name was Patrick Gately, and he was from that area of South Roscommon called Dysart, or Thomas Street, it's known as sometimes. And it's about 15 miles west of Athlone and maybe about 10 north of Ballinasloe, adjacent to the River Suck. There was a folklore collector for the Irish Folklore Commission, Jim Delaney, who was working in the area in the Midlands. And in fact, he brought some of the best artefacts in our collection into our museum. And he was working in the area and he became acquainted with this Pat Gately. He was unusual in that he had been a member of the United States Marines, in fact, in the 1920s, but he returned from his emigration, but he still retained apparently a soldierly bearing. Pat Gately, he remembered the boats in use when he was a boy on the Suck. He was sort of instructed in the making of the one he made for the museum by a couple of old people, but they couldn't agree on what the exact boat should be, and that's understandable in hindsight because they were all different types apparently. And the type that Pat Gately made, I suppose it was innovative in that he used, instead of boards and the basket, he used slating lats, sort of common slating lats. He built up a sort of a gunwale then for the boat that could take two oars. It was a bit innovative in that respect, but as I say, there were all different types anyway.
Right, we're standing underneath it. That was quick. First of all, can you describe sort of where we are at the moment?
Well, we're on the main floor here of the Museum of Country Life. The section here we're in deals with farming and fishing mainly. The rush raft is appropriately suspended over an area that deals with freshwater fishing, so inland fishing, inland waters. So it's suspended. We're looking up on it now.
Now, do you know, as I'm looking up at the underneath of the actual bundle raft, and I can see that it's all bound by the twine that you talked about.
Yes.
Had any of that twine have to be reinforced down through the years since it was originally brought in?
No, virtually nothing has been done with the boat apart from, you know, keeping it in a controlled, suitable and controlled environment.
Do you know what type of wood he used for the gunwale?
It's just deal, you know, shop deal. And then, as I said, the rods tying the sheaves together, the floor of it, they are hazel.
Is there anything that, you know, when you look at it, that kind of gives you a certain pleasure or a certain joy around this particular design?
Well, it's the uniqueness of it, really, that in international terms, really, that we have something so unique You'd have to go down to Sardinia to see the like again. It is a bit sort of gobsmacking, I suppose, in a way. It stands out, really. I mean, it's one of the most unusual artefacts in the collection.
So what did the locals think of it all? Here's local man Eamon Clare again. Now, you were telling me earlier on about Patrick Gately. He was from around here, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He lived, going back out the road, he lived at the head of the road there, just across the road in there.
And where was it that you heard about him making this bundle raft of his?
He used to come here, as they call it, around here. He come rambling at night.
A rambling house.
And he'd be talking about all that and talking about America.
When he made the bundle raft, what did you think? Did you think it was ever going to survive at all?
Well, I thought we'd be fishing him out of the river.
And did you have to fish him out of the river?
No, we did not.
So he surprised you?
Oh, he surprised all.
What did it look like?
Well, no, we two and two entice him to take to the water and he'd find something better now to. But we were wrong.
They were. Very wrong indeed. Once Pat Gately had made the bundle raft and he'd shown it to Jim Delaney, Jim contacted the director of the National Museum of Ireland at the time, a man by the name of Lucas, who basically hightailed it down to the River Suck and was confident enough to go out on the bundle raft. Now, a man who witnessed those water trials on that day was the late Jimmy Carthy, who lived at Carron Turf in Dysart.
Well, I seen it afloat on the water. I seen Pat Gately rowing it out in the river. And I seen the man that came down from Dublin to look at it, what was he, as a professor or something, and he was out in it.
And were there other people around when all this was happening?
Oh, just myself and my father were fishing there. We're friends of Pat Gately. I used to go fishing at Pat Gately, the man that made the boat.
But was there lots of people looking, or were they just kind of trying it out nice and sneakily?
Oh, just nice and quietly, you know, there was nobody around. Probably brought it up on the back of the donkey and cart, I'd say. That was the transport.
And had you heard anything about it before you saw it in sight in the Suck?
Oh, no, no.
So it just kept quiet enough?
Yeah, it was probably quite quiet. My father would have known about it well.
And do you think your father had known about it before he saw it in sight in the water?
Ah, he probably did, yeah. They were good friends. They used to fish together.
Was Pat Gately kind of a man who was well used to the water? Or
he was, yeah. I think he was an American Marine or something, he was.
So that wouldn't have knocked any stripes off him at all?
No, it would not. It was no bother to him to row it. Anyway. All you see was about 18 inches of the rushes up. It was just a frame.
And how come it didn't sink?
The rushes won't sink if you're enough of them together.
How do you know that?
I haven't heard my father saying it, yeah. You pile them up. He used to cut weeds in the river and he'd pile up a pile of rushes and he'd float off in them.
Why would he do that?
Just for the bit of crack.
Well, you see, that's exactly what we're talking about. In some ways, Pat Gately's one was very structured, but like the likes of your father doing what he did, you know, people did that all the time.
That's right, yeah. They used to work on the river and he'd build up a pile of rushes and he'd out the river. The river wouldn't be that deep, but he'd float off in them.
And was your father, like, was he somebody who loved his fishing?
Oh, he did, yeah. Pat Gately loved his fishing too.
There's your dad and yourself, and you're seeing, sweet divine, Pat Gately inside in this contraption in the middle of the river.
That's right, yeah.
Were you surprised?
Not really, no. No.
Did they row for long?
The river would be 100 yards wide at that place. Oh, they went for a good bit, they did. We went for, the other man that went out, and he went for 100 yards anyway, up and down. Same as an ordinary rowboat.
Do you know where that boat is now?
We think it's in the museum in Dublin or somewhere.
It's definitely in a museum, so it is. So it was a piece of history, so it was.
Oh, it was a piece of history, all right. I didn't think much about it that time when I seen it.
Now, it seems that Pat Gately's bundle raft had its reeds harvested, dried, and then bundled together to form the floating part of the raft. It wasn't like what Jimmy's father did on the spur of the moment by just picking up a couple of them off the side of the river and floating off in them. Reed sculptor Geraldine Wisdom is following Pat Gately's model and knows that the secret to keeping the raft floating is how tightly you bind the bundles together. She's using twine. In the old days, they would have either used split briar or pine strip, or indeed horsehair for binding. But whichever was used, the tightening of the bundle properly could take days, if you had the time. So at the start of the programme, when she was cutting a piece of V-shaped wood from her oak tree, that was a simple homemade device that the reed boat makers on the river Titicaca used to tighten the reeds together. So let's go back to Geraldine's efforts and see how she's getting on.
Give it a tighten. Wow. Amazing, isn't it?
Amazing.
This thing works quite well. If I could get it in.
Blistering work on the hands.
And it's heavy.
Mind now, Cecily, just let me pull the string.
I'm sure people who had time and energy to do it, they'd probably spend a week, literally every single day, tightening.
Yeah, I would imagine. But we only have a few hours, so we're kind of strapped for time. I think we'll do it a couple of times. So.
To solid out. I'm just leaning against it. It's solid out.
More solid we can get it.
Wow.
And then it won't kind of fall apart.
No. Are you happy so far?
Yeah, it's kind of boat shape.
It's more than boat shape. It's fantastic, so
like
it is.
A canoe.
In fact, I just kind of want to jump into it now at this stage.
We will be, hopefully.
Oh, give it a tighten. Wow.
And so, 60 years after its first launch on the River Suck, Geraldine Wisdom's replica of Pat Gately's bundle raft is about to be tested. Can I say, it's looking magnificent. And it certainly is a testament to diligence, hard effort and artistic flair. But the most important thing is, will it float? And even more crucial, will it float for a long enough period with a person on it? Let's find out.
Now, off we go. We've got 45 degrees now.
Okay, lovely. Perfect. Let it down there.
There we go.
Okay, the bundle raft is on the trolley, the launching trolley. We're making our way down to the lakeside. And basically, the plan is to test its buoyancy. There is concern that it's a little bit narrow. And if it is too narrow, then it won't be very stable. So that's a concern.
Back it off the edge of the cliff.
And then it goes.
There's the paddle that came all the way from Canada. Gone already in its first journey.
And in goes the bundle raft into the water on its maiden voyage. And on goes Geraldine straight onto it with her little oar. And that's people in the background saying she's crazy, but we'll say nothing.
Well, you can float on it anyway. Bye. See you tomorrow.
Well, it's floating.
We lost our shape. But it's a good centre, I think.
No, try the...
the wiggle, wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle. That's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah, do you feel safe?
I feel reasonably safe.
And it's slow in the water as well, so that helps too, presumably.
Well, it's
doing exactly what you hoped it was going to do, but now it's heavy trying to lift it out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's very heavy now. Very heavy. Yeah. We succeeded in going on it.
Yeah. How are you feeling?
Tired. No, I mean, it's lovely to get a spin on it, but yeah. Hard now.
But you've made a bundle raft that works. And may I add, something that has not been made as successfully for many a long year in Ireland by anyone. So well done you. What has become very apparent to me is just how easy it is to lose a tradition, especially if it's localised to a small geographical area. So keep asking those questions and keep listening to those wonderful memories that remind us of just how culturally rich we are as a nation. My name is Caroline Brennan. Thanks for listening. This series has been kindly funded by the Sound and Vision Scheme, which is a funding scheme from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.